Hey, everybody, welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
Thank you for joining us. Hey, we're here every weekend. And if we're not, we're online.
That's right.
Go check us out at your favorite podcast site.
Or in our restaurants.
Or in our restaurants, exactly. That would be lovely. We have been doing this radio show for quite a long time. We enjoy it. It's all about food and wine and people and beverages. But it's not about COVID.
No, it's not about COVID.
You have had enough COVID and enough smoke that we're going to talk about something else. Although I do love a good smoked pork rib.
I was joking yesterday. I said, we should just leave the pork rack outside and
yeah, exactly.
For a couple of days and it should be smoked.
Funny, not funny, right? Too soon. We have a big show for you. 2 hours of fun and frivolity. First, we talked to Trey Bush, winemaker of Sleight of Hand Cellars, and his new Restaurant Relief wine project. And we're going to continue to pass it down. You know, that segment where we ask you, what are some family heirloom recipes that when you pass down the list of ingredients and the list of directions on how to make the dish, that is only 1/10 of what that recipe represents, right?
Right.
When you pass down a family heirloom recipe, you're passing down memories, you're passing down age-old techniques,
and
right?
You're leaving back the memories.
You're passing down, where did I learn that recipe? You know, was I in Italy when I learned how to make this particular pasta or, you know, things like that? So we want to hear, and Madeline, our producer, has made a phone call to somebody that sent in their pass-it-down recipe for our segment. We're also going to talk to Chris Pink. She's CanCan co-founder and Chef Monica Seward at the Pike Place Market's CanCan Culinary Cabaret. School's returned. I know I have very anxious parents within our employee group that are I personally think they're just making excuses to take time off. You know, they say, oh, I have to be home to teach my kids. And then it turns out they're at the old pancake breakfast place.
Are you talking about Madeline?
No, I don't know who. No, we feel for all of you who are stuck, not stuck at home, but or who are upended in their lives teaching their kids how to cook. And we're going to hopefully show you some good kids' lunch meals that maybe they could even help make with you if you happen to have kids. If not, just listen in. It's going to be fun. Let's see. And then, of course, we're going to wrap up the show today with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Our Taste of the Week is coming up. Terry, I'll jump off here. You know, we had Trey Lamont on the show a few times in the last couple of weeks. He's a young man who started the Jerk Shack over in Belltown, and is looking for new ways to take that particular concept into neighborhoods that may be of color and buy property and get people started in that business, in the restaurant business, in a more holistic way. You know, when you own the property and not just paying rent, when you own the property, you're building wealth two different ways, right?
Right.
Not just in the business, but the actual land. So we had Trey come out to the – we were talking about doing some rubs with him. And we had him come out to the warehouse to kind of show him our rub operation. And he brought with him the whole lineup from his Jerk Shack over in Belltown. And so out there on the dock, you know, we kind of hang out on the dock or at the picnic tables out there. He cooked whole fried, literally deep fried perch. He brought some bass that he had been given. He brought pork ribs, chicken thighs. It was quite a delicious afternoon. And so that's my Taste of the Week. If you haven't been to the Jerk Shack, this is actually my first time kind of eating through the menu. I've had just little bits and taste,
right?
And I've tried his rub, but this is the first time I've had it the way he cooks it. He and Lamar came and cooked right there at the dock. We were busy doing our BLT pop-up. You know, Jackie sent over flats after flats. Oh, just beautiful.
I love myself a good BLT, especially
with
those tomatoes right now.
That sandwich, that should be as popular as burgers or teriyaki.
Oh,
I mean, that is a delicious sandwich. So anyway, we were out there on the dock cooking that on the wood fire, you know, toasting the bread on the wood fire and bacon. And Jackie sent over these big, beautiful slicing tomatoes, 5 flats of those. And God, what a perfect combination. Salty bacon, those sweet, big beefsteak tomatoes. Anyway, Texas toast. So we were out there, and we gave Trey some BLT. Trey gave us some jerk chicken, and we had a delicious picnic right there at the Ballard Warehouse dock.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it was really
good.
Sounds
like a lot of fun.
Really good and fun, and nice to see Trey and Lamar at work. You know, these guys, they're cooking.
Right.
And it's different when they make it.
Well, I like the concept of taking a container and turning it into a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's so cool if you can manage that.
Have you seen some of the Starbucks that have been built out of containers?
I haven't seen the Starbucks, but I've seen when I was in Australia, when I did a trip earlier this year, I went to a winery where the owner had bought one of these and totally reorganized the whole thing into a house. I was stunned. I mean, that's amazing what they are doing with those containers.
Yeah.
I mean, you start. That's a very low investment. And, of course, you gotta make it.
By the time you make it look nice, not so low anymore.
Well, it's not. It's far away from being buying a house on a piece of land. But the thing is, you can buy a smaller piece of land, and you can buy your house at the same time and make it yourself, you know, and or help making it. Anyway, I was very impressed by the creativity that comes behind that. Super cool. And I think designers who get into it really have a great, great fun time.
The Starbucks one in Ballard is pretty cute. There's, you know, there's one that goes lengthwise, and then there's another one on top that crosses over it. So
I haven't seen that. Where is it in Ballard?
Right across the bridge, across from the Amazon Go store there on the left-hand east, the west side of the road.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Your taste of the week, sir.
Taste of the week. I'm going to say that we have been making a tomato bisque with overripe tomato, that's a heirloom tomato from... we have this lady named Alice Wong who brings us tomato every week from Darrington. And I tell you, I had a bowl yesterday, and I was like, this is why I love to wait for the good tomatoes. You know, don't use tomatoes sliced in the winter, because we don't know. Those are not even tomatoes, as far as I'm concerned.
But the they're projectiles.
Yeah, the difference is so incredible, especially, you know, we buy it by the case. It comes on hay. It's beautiful. And... you know, there's always a few tomatoes that gets overripe in the case, obviously. And you take those and you make a quick bisque, or I call it a bisque. It's just a soup, but quickly sauteed in olive. You cut them in small pieces. You sauteed quickly in olive oil, salt, pepper, fresh herbs, and then blend the whole thing into a blender. So it's not even entirely pureed, but you blend the whole thing and then you strain it and you just eat that cold. With lots of olive oil finish and a little bit of sea salt, you know, finish on top. It's just so delicious. I mean, it showcased the tomato all the way. And right now, oh my God, eat the tomatoes. There's plenty of it. I mean, it's just a celebration of tomatoes right now. I love it.
It's awesome. And it's just such a short window of the year.
Yeah, I mean,
You can get early tomatoes, you can get late tomatoes, but when they are perfect, like right this minute, it is an awesome time.
And put it in the freezer.
Let's get started on our big show, okay, Mr. Row to Row?
All right.
Trey Bush next of Sleight of Hand Sellers on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. All right, we're back in the Hot Stove Society kitchen here at 4th and Virginia, downtown Seattle. And this is where we do our show. It's where I did my timpano class last night.
That's why it still smells like garlic in here.
I know. I cooked a lot of garlic last night. We do our virtual classes here. And if you go to hotstovesociety.com, you can look into those and sign up for those and get a cooking box and all that sort of thing.
I just have one quick question. Did any stick to the bottom, or did they all come out?
Mine came out. I don't know about the ones we sent out to all of our viewers, but...
Good.
On the phone is Trey Bush of Sleight of Hand Sellers, and Trey is trying to give some relief to the restaurants around Seattle, around the Western Washington, and, of course, probably all over the state, and trying to give some relief, and is offering a special deal for restaurants to kind of come back and... And by buying some of his wine, that he's donating a lot of the value of the wine right back to our cause. So, Trey, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom and Thierry. Great to be here. I'm actually in Walla Walla. You guys are in Seattle. I'm in Walla Walla right now, enjoying a little overcast, hazy, smoky afternoon or morning.
So. We got you on that, man. It is smoky as heck here right now.
Yeah, I was following some weather trends, and you know, all that smoke from Oregon, California has been blowing off, has been blowing to the west, but the wind shifted last night, and apparently the next 3 or 4 days are supposed to be miserable for Washington and Oregon on both sides of the mountain. So I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah. So tell us about your Restaurant Relief Wine Project.
Sure. My business partner, Jerry Solomon, was going through Wine Spectator and had seen that Quilcita Creek had done something for the I don't know if it was the Washington Restaurant Group or if it was a national organization, but they wrote a big fat check based on some sales that they had done from their wines. And we were preparing for bottling in June and July for all of our wines from 2018 vintage to 2019 vintage. And we sat down and talked about it, and we came up with, obviously the restaurants in Washington are very important for us as a small Washington winery. It's our number one outlet for our wines outside of our tasting room. And with the restaurants closed, that put a dent in, not only our sales, but, we need you guys to all be around when this is all over. And so we felt like we should do something for our restaurant partners. And so we couldn't tangibly write a check like Quilcita did, but what we could do is bottle some wine and allow the restaurants to then take that money. We had to sell it to a restaurant that it cost. It's illegal to give wine away to Washington, but we have sold it to all the restaurants at cost. And that has allowed the restaurants to be able to then just have more margin to, pay for their rent or help their employees out or whatever they need to do with it to stay viable and to stay open. And so it was only 300 cases of wine. We wish we could have done more, but the overall financial impact, we think was, if you spread it out between all the restaurants that we were sending that wine out to, it's pretty considerable.
Well, as a restaurateur, I'll tell you, and maybe Terry wants to jump in too, but it's just such a sweet thought,
yeah,
to think about doing this and to give the restaurants an opportunity to make some margin and to pay some bills and to have a leg up.
Yeah, when your guy came to see me and he goes, we're doing this thing with Trey, and I looked at him and I was like, man, you know how much inventory of wine I have to get rid of? And I'm thinking, but then I looked at the whole thing and, the offering and the idea of helping the community and the restaurant community, so I just cracked and bought a few cases.
Uh-huh, nice job.
Well, because, one hand wash the other, and we need to help each other as much as we can. I'm not on the sidewalk yet, so, bought a few cases. And your deal was super affordable and not scary. And you didn't come around and go, hey, my bundles are $150 a piece. So, it was actually affordable to buy. And honestly, it was like, let's just do this and help Trey accomplish his goal here, because that's a good goal.
Yeah,
I agree. No, I appreciate that, and it's not like we were parceling off inferior wine. We actually pulled. We work with a vineyard called Lewis Vineyards in the Yakima Valley, and Lewis Vineyard was planted in 1998. My mentor Eric Dunham was the first winery to start working with that fruit. And when I was working for Eric, when at my first job in the wine business back in 2000, I was one of the very first wines that I actually worked on was the 99 Lewis Vineyard Syrah. I remember bottling that wine. I remember working on the label design with Eric. And so that vineyard is a special place in my heart. I've worked with it for 20 vintages in a row now. And we now have 4 acres, and so it's quite a bit of Syrah up there. And so we were able to pull some of that Syrah out of our reserve Syrah, but we make a wine called Levitation. And, the Lewis is usually a huge chunk of that. And so we just pulled a little bit of the Lewis Vineyard Syrah out of the Levitation to, bottle on its own for that restaurant wine.
Super cool.
Yeah. Very, very good.
So if somebody's at a restaurant, what are they asking for? If you see it on the wine list, what will it say?
Oh, it just says restaurant relief. It says sleight of hand restaurant relief on the label.
Okay.
Whether they label it as a Syrah or whether they label it as restaurant relief, but that's it is 100% Lewis Vineyard Syrah.
Cool.
It's a very nice gesture on your part, you guys.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Thierry. Thank you very much. Look, like I said, it's very important that you guys are around when we come out of all of this. And I already see the downtown Seattle and the effects that this pandemic has had just on the downtown core alone.
Yeah,
it can be very interesting to see what the landscape looks like when this is all over. But like I said, I think it's very important that you guys are still around for us.
So one of the things that we know of when you go to Walla Walla, you're over in Walla Walla right now. One of the things we know is that when people go from Seattle through Yakima down into Prosser, Tri-Cities, and then hit Walla Walla at the end of the Washington State boundary line, basically, is that there's lots and lots of people heading that direction. And I wanted people to know that your tasting room is open.
We are open. We actually have a tasting room in Soto as well in Seattle. It's got more limited hours.
There's more people in Walla Walla than there is in Seattle right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And we've seen, it's been interesting. You know, we've had to move to online only reservations-based system because it's all outdoor seating. And so it's not like our old tasting room where you just walk in and, you know, straddle up to the bar and you know, we pour you a flight of wine. Now it's a sit-down, seated tasting for 45 minutes. And it's been very interesting. First of all, everyone's very receptive to it, even though it's a very different vibe than what our tasting room used to be. We've always been known as the fun tasting room. And we still think we provide a lot of fun, but we've got these more, they're almost a more intimate educational tasting experience that we were not offering before. And so as we come out of this on our side of things, we're going to keep a part of that. We're going to keep, we're going to still offer seated reservation tastings for folks who want that experience, along with our normal tasting room, which was, you know, coming up and, you know, pick out an album and listen to some great music and drink some wine.
So that was fun.
Thank you, appreciate that.
So go over and see Trey Bush at Sleight of Hand Cellars, or go to a local restaurant and order some of the restaurant relief wine. Either way, you're going to have a delicious time. Thank you, Trey Bush, for joining us. And up next, we're going to talk about a school lunch program with Madeline Dow and her children. Is that what you call your kids' children?
No.
To me, they're wild beasts. When we come back on Common Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society. It's time for back to school lunches. We might even be a little bit late on this. I was talking to Madeline, our producer, and she has been pulling her hair out about trying to figure out all the different things to do with her children stuck at home, trying to do school and to eat lunch and eat breakfast and spend quality time. And if you know Madeline like I know Madeline, spending that much time with her children actually makes her enjoy her work life.
I think there is some truth to that for a lot of people. I mean, this is drastically changing their life, especially for mothers who are staying home, you know, doing schooling, number one. That puts a lot.
Fathers.
That's a very nerve-wracking. Because you want to do a good job. You want to make sure your kid, you know, gets education at the same time. So that's, number one, that's hard. Two, the surrounding is your house. So that's a complete different ballgame. And, you know, just dropping them out of school, you know, it's not like there's a teacher taking care of it. So those different setting creates a lot of, you know, nerve-wracking station.
Well, I thought we would ask Madeline to kind of explain what the situation is for so many parents right now. And maybe if you're listening and you're a parent, you'll get some ideas on possible solutions, at least lunch anyway. That's what we do. We can't really teach geometry, but we can teach how to make lunch.
That's true. We do have a newfound appreciation for all of the teachers out there. Let me be the first one to say, and not the last. We miss being in school, but we're trying to make it work. And you're right, Terry. It's an impossible task to juggle not only multiple kids, but feeding them and getting them on Zoom and on the calls and all of that fun stuff. Technology is a whole new chapter in our life of trying to be able to get them online at the right time, and it's tricky. So,
and to keep them, and how do they keep their attention? So, I guess kids love screens, so they get sucked into it, but
they get screens, but it's hard. It's also very distracting. You see, you know, your other friends, but in a small one by one little frame, and trying to pay attention to what your teacher's saying, in addition to juggling the books that they sent home. And It's a challenge for
sure. So have you set up like a little room for them to go to so that it's more focused than having all their toys around and having the dog or whoever around? Are you kind of like sequestering them in some little spot?
Locked. In a basement. we are actually a part of a unique situation. We do have a small little pod set up with a couple other kids. So we've been able to rotate because we all are working parents and couldn't, to Tom's point, juggle both work and school. So we've had a little rotation. We're fortunate, but I think that's what the recommendation of the schools is to, set up a neutral space. Get away from the toys and the screens and the other things in your house that might cause some distraction. But what I'm hoping is how to get those kids in the kitchen and away from the screens is kind of what I was thinking.
For a certain point of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah. They have a nice long, the teachers need the break too. So that's something to remember, right? These teachers are trying to juggle just as many Zoomlings. And so we've been fortunate, at least with our schedule, to have a nice hour-long lunch break. And I think that parents are looking for fun ways to get their kids to help out and make some fun lunches, whether it's recreating a leftover from the night before, if there's something that they can do, or creating something easy, getting their hands dirty. I think there's some fun measuring skills they could learn in the kitchen. So
what is a cup? What is a tablespoon?
Exactly.
All that.
The first thing that comes to mind is you could make the pasta. You could make pastas with them the night before or the morning of, or just beforehand, and then just cook them during lunch break and show them how it's done. And that could be a good thing that you can prep ahead. I think it's one thing that saves a lot of aggravation is prep ahead, because you only have an hour.
Exactly.
Out of that hour, you're spending 20 minutes eating, sitting at the table at least. So you basically have a half hour to get off the school and get into the mode of let's do something in the kitchen kind of thing. And so a half hour goes by really fast. And
so, Terry, when you were cooking school lunches and you were searing the foie gras and serving it with sauterne jelly
and
the duck confit, did you show your kids how to make that, or did it just show up in the lunchbox one day?
Well, when it was the foie gras, I was just doing it.
You were just doing it to go to the school and cook it a la minute.
Exactly. It was a portable, portable stove. No, but I think there is, I think sandwiches, BLT, like we were talking about, a good BLT this time of year. Great and cured bacon. You get some good heirloom tomato that are everywhere right now. You can have that stuff already prepped, now, but not assembled.
I just want to be clear. Madeline's kids are, 6 and 4?
7 and 4, yep.
7 and 4.
Yeah, so they can eat anything.
Yeah, sort of. Kids are picky. But I do think it's an interesting time. Some of the things we do on this radio show, when we test out different ingredients and we say, is it worth it, right? Like, is the heirloom tomato more worth double the money than the crappy square-shaped tomato that comes in a box for 10 weeks? It would be interesting to maybe talk to your kids about quality, food quality, and some of the things that you can teach them. We've talked about this over the years about your 18-year-olds. Your kids should not leave your home at 18 or 20 or 21 without knowing how to roast a chicken and make an omelet and do some of the basics.
Correct.
In their own kitchen.
Boil some water and make some pasta.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is just a head start on that a little bit.
Totally. And I think we're also right now, despite the smoke, we're in a good situation. We still have a lot of gardens out there. Mm-hmm. Our tomatoes are just turning right now in our yard. But maybe even getting the kids involved in going to the farmer's market that weekend, right? And you get to pick out the produce for the rest of the week.
They get excited your lunches.
To plan the lunches. I wrote down a couple ideas here, because there's either stir fries or some quick pasta with the vegetables. And if they can, really learn about where that fruit and vegetable is kind of coming from and have the enjoyment of picking it out for the week ahead, that's also kind of fun.
Same with rice. These are good vessel to prep ahead or put it in the rice cooker, and then when you're ready for lunch, you just stir fry that or whatever you want to do with that.
So what is your kid's favorite so far? You've been homeschooling now for 2 weeks?
I'm a little over 2 weeks now. Uh-huh. We are big fans of Ants on a Log, which I'm already cutting ahead of our trivia question. Uh-huh. But my daughter Reese loves Ants on a Log, which is celery, peanut butter, and raisins. Uh-huh. Very basic.
Right. But you got a vegetable, you got a protein, and a fruit.
Exactly. Yeah. And they love it. It's super easy for them to eat. The best invention, in my opinion, over the last couple years have been these awesome bento box lunch boxes for these kids, because my kids kind of will eat and nitpick a little bit. They're not huge sandwich eaters. They like them, but These little bento boxes have perfect little containers, so you can just put a couple slices of turkey, a couple little raisins, and they can kind of throw a little poo-poo platter, so to
yeah,
speak.
Right, right.
It makes it really easy. But
do they finish it?
They do.
Good.
They clean
That's
it
awesome.
Up. Little gummy vitamins in the middle, just in, yeah. for good measure. And
what about participation? Do you have to force it, or are they willing participants?
You know, the schooling and this whole new chapter for a lot of kids, you know, they've been out of school since almost March. It's exhausting. So they are hungry. Mm-hmm. They will eat it all. Usually need a morning snack as well as an afternoon snack. Uh-huh. So that's a whole nother planning component that we have to think of. Little squeeze packs of applesauce and stuff like that makes uh-huh. it pretty easy. But I don't know. I was trying to think of some fun leftovers to use actually next time, too, because whether to Thierry's point, how can you best utilize some of the stuff that you've already made?
Yeah.
You can use
No, I mean, that's the key. I mean, it's Sunday, you have time or whatever, you decide on one day a week, you can roast chicken or two.
Yeah.
You know, and have, now you have all this meat that's available. You have one dinner that you make the day of, and then the rest goes into, you know, different things that you can make, whether it's a pasta, a rice, a sandwich.
Teriyaki sauce with the chicken.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There is a million things you can do with roasted leftover chicken. So, you know, it's those are good things to think about. The only thing is you have to plan ahead. It's just like everything else. You have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
You could do a little small roast of pork and have sliced cold cut, you know, or even stir fried. You could stir fry your pork and, again, put it in some rice, and then you have a wonderful lunch.
I think
you put some broccoli with that, and you have completely mixed, you know,
making
good meal.
Some preserved products sounds like fun to me, too. Like,
right.
We just spent a couple of hours at the farm doing the Prosser Meatball Project, where we just, you know, I had brought up 10 pounds of different meats to put into meatballs, lots of cheeses, and we made tiny little meatballs for the freezer. Four of us, it took us 2 hours to make all the meatballs.
Wow.
We each took home bags, you know, with hundreds of meatballs, and they're in all of our freezers now, Loretta's, Jackie's, mine, and so just pull them out, and you're ready to go for a little spaghetti meatball lunch.
That's perfect.
That they participated
that.
In, right? You're not
exactly.
opening a can of meatballs.
Yeah, yeah.
They participated in making those, and they'll remember that when the meatballs are finally on the table.
Absolutely. There's a sense of pride. They want to tell everybody.
There should be one day where you're making crepes, you know, just nice, beautiful.
That's a good one, Terry. That
just making crepes with the kid. They're going to love you. You put everything on the table to go in it. The Nutella,
the ham and spinach.
This is not a balanced meal. This is a fun day.
Exactly.
You know, if you do your job well, you know, we'll make some crepes. And you make crepes and it's fun. And there is not a kid in the world that doesn't like a good roll
crepe. It's like, that goes to play my bribery skills with the Nutella.
Are they getting better?
They're getting really well.
You're always pretty good at bribery, though.
Bribery is perfect with Nutella. That's perfect. Well, thank you. We appreciate it. We're hoping to get these kids in the kitchen a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, why not? You're home. You're with them.
This is a perfect opportunity to show them a few tricks. You know, most importantly, to show them then the food does not just come in a bag. You know, you just...
Under saran wrap?
Yeah, and you make it. You know, you just make some of it, and it's delicious.
Chicken noodle soup or dumpling soup, like a wonton soup.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Yum.
Super fun. All right, our next segment is called Pass It Down. We want to hear from you, and I believe Madeline has talked to one of you and gotten a family heirloom recipe that we are going to hear about next on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And we are going to talk about our favorite recipes.
Or someone else's
or
favorite
someone
recipes.
You know, we have a saying around here at the Hot Stove, don't let the recipe box die with you. In other words, take that family heirloom recipe that you've been saving from your grandma or from your mom or from your dad's mom or from your dad or whoever that came from. Take the recipe, the ingredients, the instructions, and the lore, and pass it down to the next generation or to a neighbor or to a friend, especially in this time. It's good to cook for people. So we have taken, or Madeline has taken, our producer has taken to calling folks that have sent in an idea of their heirloom recipe, their family tradition, and finding out the backstory. When we are back in the world of things, we'll actually go directly to these folks, but right now it's better for us to have Madeline call him and kind of get the backstory and tell us all about your interaction. So, Maddie, who do you have up this week?
We had a listener and fan, Kurt, send us this story from his grandmama, actually. So you said grandma, but this is the grandmama.
Grandmama. And Terry has to pronounce his last name.
That's true.
His last Monsieur name? Monsieur Kurt de Montigny.
Montigny, like the beautiful Burgundy.
Right, Montigny.
Yeah. Montigny.
Montigny, yes. It's close enough. Montigny.
Chambeau Montigny.
Musigny. That's close enough.
Okay.
He sent us their tourtière recipe. Is that how you pronounce it?
Tourtière.
Tourtière. It's a family recipe that he has made every year around Christmas, and wanted to get sort of your thoughts and ideas of how to make it a little bit more special. He is very excited to have you guys take a look, and is really wanting to actually play this episode for his grandmama.
Oh, really? Cool.
Still around, so no pressure.
Okay.
But well, he grew up. This is a meat pie that she used to make. She's originally from Quebec. They traditionally eat it with ketchup. And he believes that she adapted it from an older recipe from the 50s. It calls for instant potatoes, I believe, which doesn't have a whole lot of flavor. So they're looking for suggestions on that.
Mm-hmm.
But he really enjoys it and is just looking for some upgrades, I believe.
And so that's, you know, I think that's okay. And I think some people are afraid, right, when they have grandmama's recipe, they're afraid to touch it. They just, this is the way grandmama made it, so this is the way I make it. And I don't necessarily believe that's the case. For example, she used instant potatoes.
I would actually rephrase that to, you do not believe about that at all.
I think it's perfectly fine.
Right.
But my point is, I don't think you have to be stuck in time.
Correct.
I think the essence of the recipe, if you go by what I'm saying, you know, every week, which is the recipe, the list of ingredients and instructions are just a part of what's important about that recipe, right? It's grandmama that's important.
Well, we
so
always,
it's the memory of her. It's the smell of her making this in the kitchen. There's so much more to it than just the
correct
ingredients and their directions.
The memory that comes with it is definitely, it does not necessarily mean you have to stick to the recipe. It just means you wish you could go back 50 years and be standing in that kitchen again with grandmama and have her make the pie and you smelling it. And,
right.
You know, I mean,
and if it's anything like my mother, you know, a lot of those 50s and 60s recipes came out when things like instant mashed potatoes were invented. On the back of the box, you know, they were trying to show you ways
to use it,
yeah, and to be successful with it.
And like your mom, Tom, she was also raising five kids, you know, so
yeah,
this is a time saver as well. So
my mom had
that
six girls alone,
six
much
girls.
Less two boys.
So there's time-saving components that were quite popular back mm-hmm. then, mm-hmm. as well as now, as we just spoke about in our last segment. But I think that's a component, too, to keep in
yeah.
mind.
Right.
And there's no doubt in my mind, and I don't think anyone could argue that instant mashed potatoes basically are mashed potatoes. And if you were to take the new potatoes that Jackie just grew at our farm and make mashed potatoes out of them, they would be 10 times better.
Oh, yeah.
And grandmama would love them.
Yes.
I mean, so that's kind of what you have to put together is
right.
when you're making an adjustment and you want to maintain a memory, just do things that are in the spirit of right. the particular recipe. So
in this recipe, you know, there is all kind of ground meat. I mean, you can obviously pick your meat, but it says pork, it says beef, it says... what's the other one? It's a pork, beef. Then there's small onion diced, and clove, cinnamon, and water, half a cup of water. Now, I do believe that the flake mashed potato, powder mashed potato, would definitely help imbibe all that liquid that gets formed when you start cooking all this meat, the rendering of the fat, the rendering, you know, with that water and everything. All that rendering, when you put the instant mashed potato in it, it basically helps thicken it.
Mm-hmm.
So it swallows some of that, which once you put that in a pie, it won't be liquid and, you know, running everywhere. So that's something to keep in mind. If you did real mashed potato, what I would do is take the mashed potato and then drop all that juice after you cooked all that meat, take all that juice, strain it, and put it into the mashed potato and incorporate it into the mashed potato and put the mashed potato back in.
Well, you wouldn't need the water, right, is what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, Well, that water is probably just so the meat doesn't stick to the pan. Probably very basic.
The way I read the recipe, it says that the heat to boiling, reduce to heat, do not cover, simmer a half hour, stir now and then, turn off, and add instant potato.
Right.
So you're adding a dry potato, and it's going to soak up the juices, right?
Correct, yeah.
That's what's going to make the mashed potatoes.
And mostly by then.
So your point is if you're making mashed potatoes, you don't need the extra liquid.
Correct. And you also can put – you can still put that water – I think that water is mostly – to be able to have the meat not burn. I think they were afraid to stick the meat to stick to the pan.
Well, if the water's not there, the potatoes are just going to be powder.
if you take regular mashed potato, okay, if you render that meat, you're going to have fat that's going to come out. That's the first thing that's going to come out. And then you're going to have it with
a little
bit of...
They're not understanding what I'm saying.
Okay.
They're adding the instant mashed potatoes, but not hydrated. They're just adding the instant potatoes.
Right, right, which sucks up all the...
Yeah. So if you take out the water, you're not going to be able to...
Correct.
I mean, so my point is, if you're adding your own mashed potatoes, you need to eliminate some of the moisture in the pot.
Right. Anyway, yes, we're going to the same place.
Okay.
But, yes, I would definitely go with... I mean... Like you said, if there's beautiful potato on the market right now, it's like, why not make a fresh mashed potato and put it in there? I would also, I mean, you could also add a few veggies in there. You could do like, you know, like some green Swiss chard and put it in there if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
That would add another profile to the beast. And that's it. I mean, make sure you cook your greens. If you're going to put greens, make sure you cook them and drain them really well. Or, you know, again, put all that juice back into the mashed potato.
You know, it's kind of fun here, which you just don't see a whole lot of in these kind of meat pies, at least I don't, is the clove and the cinnamon.
Right.
Quarter teaspoon doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot.
That's actually a lot.
That's a lot of
clove. Especially cinnamon.
So that's going to have a real profile in this particular kind of meat pie or shepherd's pie. This
right.
is very British in some ways without that clove
right.
and without the cinnamon. It's very British and probably part of why it's from Canada. Even though they're from Quebec and French, you still get influenced by your surroundings, by your neighbors,
right?
You've
been
to your neighbor, you've been to the grocery store, you've got the box of instant mashed potatoes. Maybe this recipe was on the back.
I'm pretty sure then that quarter spoon could be, you could do a quarter of that.
Well, that it depends. It really depends. I was eating jerk chicken yesterday, and there was so much clove in the dry rub, I thought, I'm not going to like this. I'm not the biggest clove person in the world. And by the time it was all done and he added four times more rub than I added, it was delicious.
Right.
Right? Because all of a sudden the fat of the chicken met up with the spices and it was cooked long enough for caramelization. And all of a sudden some of those distinct individual flavors started to disappear.
Right.
So maybe some of that spice disappears when they're cooking their ground beef and their ground pork.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well, definitely the onions will definitely eat some of that spice for sure. Because,
yeah, for sure. Well, what a fun recipe. Grandmama, it sounds delicious. When we are back open for visitors here at the Hot Stove Society during our radio show, we would fully expect that you would join us and bring your son Kurt or grandson Kurt and join us here in the studio and make us some meat pie. some what do you call it? Some
tortiere.
Tortiere.
Yeah, and if you have future recipes that you want to send us, they can post them to our Facebook page or email us at hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com.
Super fun. I love to get to know people through their recipes. All right, up next, it's Chicken and Plums Sheet Pan Meal by our friend Melissa Clark from the New York Times on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Thanks for hanging with us during that long break. It's Tom Douglas.
And Jerry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
This is the Hot Stove Society radio show, formerly Seattle Kitchen. Yes, you're listening to the same folks. We just changed the name because we're always here at the Hot Stove.
I've kept my accent.
I know. You've kept your accent. How often do you have to practice your accent in order to keep
every
it so...
Every morning in the mirror.
Sounding so real.
It's work.
We are going to have another full, packed, jam-packed hour for you. Jam-packed, that's like a little food pun. Get it? Jam-packed.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
We're going to talk about a one-night-only pop-up for the Palace Kitchen out at our warehouse dock in Ballard. One of the, you know, I get calls every day or emails every day, like, when are you going to reopen this? When are you going to reopen that? And one of the things we get the most calls on is, when is the Palace Kitchen going to be open? I am desperate for the Palace Burger and the Palace Smoky Chicken Wings.
Wings.
And the Pleen, you know, the little ravioli that we've made for 25 years, the little Pleen that Martha makes.
I don't think I've ever been to the Palace without having the Pleens.
The Pleens, yeah. So we're going to have a one-night-only pop-up out at the dock. We're going to talk about the Pike Place Market's Can-Can Culinary Cabaret. And, of course, we're going to wrap up with tasty trivia brought to you by Rub With Love. I wanted to jump into this, Terry. You've got something to talk about, but also Melissa Clark did a nice little meal, which I thought was really smart for today's home cook who's just trying to get food on the table. Maybe they're sick and tired of cooking for themselves, sick and tired of not being able to go out to a restaurant, and just are trying to do simple fresh local food. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But what do you got? You got a cruise coming up.
Yes, I know it sounds kind of crazy right this time to talk about cruises, but we were supposed to go to the Rhone Valley in June this year, but obviously with COVID, did I get postponed? So we're doing next year, June 6th through the 13th, we're doing a cruise through the Rhone Valley, starting in Arles, which is in the southern part of the Rhone Valley, mm-hmm. and then cruise through all the villages up to Lyon. So there is three winemakers that are joining. There is Kerry Shield from Côte Bonneville, Jeff Lindsay from WT Ventners, and Larry Stone from Lingua Franca in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So all three of those people are going to, you know, talk about wine, obviously. So it's a wine and food tour, obviously. The boat itself is fairly, the ship maybe, I don't know if it's not called a boat, it's a ship. It has 150 people on it, and it's a very quaint, even though with a number like this, it's fairly quaint. We do tons of excursion on the road, go to Valrhona Museum Chocolate. We go to many wineries, obviously, Chateau Neuf du Pape and so on. We go to some great restaurants. One stop is Paul Bocuse at Collonges Mondor. The other one is Lousteau de Beaumanière in Les Baux de Provence. Anyway, it's a beautiful trip. We did it 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and it's a fantastic trip. If you are interested in going to this trip, there's a great discount going on in September, great promotion offer. Northwesttravel.com is the site to go. Ask for Bradley, and he will be more than happy to help you. But hope you join us, because we're going to have a blast. I believe half the ship is already sold, so enjoy the discount that's available in September. And I would encourage anybody who wants to go to France. Remember, this is next June. So,
yeah,
you know, by then life will be
9 months from now.
Yeah, and if it doesn't happen, I mean, Bradley can give you all the information about, you know, what happened to your money. I know for some people are like, what do you mean?
All right, let's talk for a second about Melissa Clark from the New York Times. You know, years ago she was on the show quite often, and as things came up in the food pages, I happen to be a believer that the New York Times food pages are the best in the world from what I read. I really feel like they cover a large swath. Their recipe ideas are interesting. If you look at who's been through those pages, Mark Bittman and a lot of Pete Wells, the reviewer, and Melissa Clark writes oftentimes. Right. Really, I think well worth the subscription price to the New York Times is, besides the crossword puzzles, is the food pages.
I don't have time for the crossword puzzle. It takes me too long.
I know. They're so hard. Monday and Tuesday, I'm fine. Wednesday, halfway. Thursday, I'm toast. And, you know, they get harder as the week goes on.
You know, when you talk about food publication, I also want to touch with something called Gastro Obscura. If you have a chance to go online and get to that site, it's a very cool site. They have some of the best articles. They research really good mm-hmm. food articles. It's a great place to go as a if you're interested in food. And, you know, it's just great reading.
Yeah.
Just like the New York Times.
Well, this particular article by Melissa, it was posted, beautiful recipe, cheat pan chicken with roasted plums and onions. And I think that what struck me about the recipe was that people oftentimes will bake some chicken thighs or bake mm-hmm. the chicken breast or something of that nature. This particular recipe, when it's a sheet pan like this, I personally think you probably want to go boneless.
Yeah.
But
not necessarily.
I think either that or break, you know, pound the chicken a little bit if it's a breast. If it's a thigh, I'd probably go personally boneless because I don't want to over roast everything else on the pan
right.
before my
right.
chicken thigh is actually cooked all the way through to 160 degrees or so. So what I loved about it was it felt like this moment. Her recipe felt like this moment. If you right. look at what's coming up at our farm right now, the Italian plums are perfect.
Booming.
Booming. Our red onions just finished drying. After we pick the onions, we lay them out on racks with fans and dry that outer skin.
Right.
So that when you pack them all together, they don't mold.
Right.
So our red onions are perfect right now. Chicken is lovely all the time. And she just takes the chicken, she marinates it a bit, and you can do that with anything, fennel seed, all sorts of
it's
different.
It's funny you mentioned all that. I literally, for the staff yesterday, did that with, I took a chicken, broke it down 10 pieces,
uh-huh.
you know, cut everything down. I kept on the bone, but I marinated with a little sumac and some spices, mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. lots of fennel.
Yeah.
And I did that, and I left it on the counter, you know, for like a 45 minutes to an hour, mm-hmm. marinated really nicely, and then roasted it. And
yeah,
it was
so this you put on a cookie sheet. And then you put the sliced onions around, you put the plums around, you put the marinated chicken on, and this would work with pretty much anything. And then you just simply bake the whole thing as a one-pot dish in the oven. And I think what was interesting also about this dish is that all you have to do is kind of marinate the chicken an hour or two ahead of time.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, you know, you do your prep on the vegetables, but the whole thing is once you've gotten over the marinade part, the whole thing is a 30-minute meal.
Right.
20-minute meal, mm-hmm. all on one pan.
Exactly.
All, you know, and enough for two people or
and there is no
people.
Way in the world you won't have leftovers.
And the plums, if they're ripe, they kind of melt down into a sauce,
yeah.
right? The plums and
yeah,
the onions
become
caramelize.
Yeah, they become puree sauce.
You don't need to puree it. I know you like to puree everything.
It becomes like puree thing.
Oh, my
like
goodness.
It's not pureed. Oh, my God, look at
you
him.
You puree everything. Anyway, you just have a nice chunky, it becomes like a chutney.
Thank
you don't
you.
Puree chutney, do you?
Well, 20 minutes plum in the oven, if it's a nice plum ripe, it's going to be...
It's going to break down. It's
yeah.
going to become syrupy. And if you want it sweeter, you just add a little honey, right? If you want it less tart or less sweet, you don't add honey.
Right.
Pretty simple.
No, exactly.
Anyway, so check out Melissa's plum roasted... sheet pan roasted chicken with plums and onions. I just thought it was kind of perfect for the time and place that we're all in at the moment. Simple, seasonal, and delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, up next, quickly, it's the Palace Kitchen pop-up. We're going to talk about some Palace favorites, some Palace history. And if you've never been to our restaurant, the Palace Kitchen, now's the time to learn where it came from. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I was almost going to say it's the Palace Kitchen Radio Hour because we're going to talk Palace Kitchen a little bit. For a bit, Chef Terry is in the house in his chapeau.
Yes, and Palace Kitchen is a very special restaurant to me because as my boys grew up, you know, when they were little, I remember very specifically quite a few times going with Ryan and Adrian and Kathy into the Palace Kitchen, and literally Adrian would walk straight through, not wait for the hostess, walk through and sit in the booth. We'd have to stop him, and he goes, "Well, that's a table." I'm like, "You don't have a table here. You got to wait till somebody sits you down." But the Palace is a very special restaurant. Obviously, it's not open right now, but I think it's a very special yeah. restaurant. It's a very, to me, it's a quite essential feel-good neighborhood joint because of, you know, the feeling in that restaurant. You created magic in that restaurant. Like, there is no obstruction anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important. You know, many restaurants, my restaurants, first, you know, sometimes I see things we do and I'm like, you know, that probably takes a little comfort out of some people's dining experience, you know. And so you try not to do this kind of stuff. You try to make it so people feel comfortable at all time and you want them to come back. So I love the Palace.
It's a funny, Palace has always had kind of a classic feel to it. It was intended to be that way. It was intended to kind of be a little New Yorkish. In its feel and its brawn, as far as the old buildings in Soho mm-hmm. and places like that. And I'll never forget, Palace was maybe 5 years old, 8 years old or so, maybe 10. It's 25 years old now. And I was back in Wilmington, Delaware, visiting some friends. You know, I'm from that area when I was a kid. And I went into this restaurant in Wilmington and God, this place looks familiar to me. It's just so weird. And it just had this feel about it that I recognized and immediately. And it felt very palace-y. And I was talking to the bartender. I said, you know, this restaurant feels really familiar to me. It's just kind of funny. He says, well, you know, it's really modeled after this place that we found out in Seattle called the Palace Kitchen. Isn't that funny?
In your town.
He didn't know that I was who I was,
wow.
that I owned the Palace or anything like that. I just thought that was one of the funniest coincidences that
one
ever.
One of the greatest compliments on the planet.
Yeah. So Palace was our third restaurant. And what I remember most about when we first signed our lease there was we had just signed a lease at Etta's. I was in negotiations at the Palace, and then Etta's came up, and I had history in that space because right. I was the chef and general manager at a restaurant called Cafe Sport, where Etta's is now. And so I had history there. So here I'm up negotiating on what was going to be my second restaurant space, just a block and a half from Dahlia, right?
Right, right.
And all of a sudden, I get a call from Etta's, and they're offering me to give it to me for free.
Right.
And it's like, oh, my God, I have history there. I know that space inside and out. It's in the Pike Place Market area. Right. I love the market. So I couldn't turn down Etta's, but I had already come to an agreement on the Palace. So I literally signed two leases
at once
in the same day for two different restaurants. But I had a year of free rent at the Palace, was part of my negotiation.
Right.
So I could get it built, because it was a fabric store when I took it over. It's right. called Elegance Fabrics. Literally the little barriers that hem in the bar are made from the old fabric racks from Elegance Fabrics.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that funny? But anyway, so I went ahead and I did Etta's over that first year, and then 11 months later, we opened the Palace Kitchen right behind it. So
right.
12 months, something like that. So Palace has been around for quite a long time. It is, if you've been to the Palace Kitchen, you probably remember the big mural on the wall.
Of course.
And when we first opened, I had run out of money, and I couldn't afford that. But I had this vision in my head for that mural, and I had a woman named Jennifer Carrasco, was an artist in town who did big kind of paintings like of that nature, and we talked about it, talked about what my vision was, talked about the era that I wanted. You know, the whole idea of the Palace was not to be a fancy, like, palatial restaurant. The whole idea of the Palace was to be the basement of the Palace.
Of the Chateau.
Of the Chateau, where all the cooks and the waiters hang out.
That's right.
Right? Because I love that group of people.
Right.
I love the energy. It's very sexy and romantic energy. It's a multicultural energy. I don't need the Palace. I don't need the king and queen upstairs.
Right,
I
right.
like the people that service the king and queen. So that's what the Palace Kitchen was, and that's what that painting was intended to be. So
right.
if you look closely at that painting, it is 30 feet wide by 8 feet tall. And her living room, Jennifer's living room, could only handle a 10-foot canvas by 8 feet tall. So she made three of them. And she spliced them together on the wall. We just sprayed kind of tack glue up on the wall and set the actual canvases on the wall, and then built the big frame, the big gold frame
right,
around it.
Right.
Up there on the wall.
Because nobody has a frame that big either.
I know, exactly. So that's where the Palace Kitchen kind of the
thought
was.
It is a masterpiece. That thing is beautiful.
It's just super fun. And we always keep a card at the front desk about the story behind the painting, right?
Yeah, it gives a great piece. A big, big influence into the place itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
And the little chandeliers I bought, I was in New York City, and I bought them at ABC Home, those little kind of fruit glass
right.
chandeliers, and they've been there ever since. They've always been too small in my mind.
Right.
People love them, and matter of fact, when we had to close, people immediately sent me emails. Can we buy the chandeliers? It's like, we're just closed for a little bit. Stop trying to buy everything that I have. You know, when we closed, we thought we were going to be closed for 8 to 12 weeks. It's now the 15th. The 15th of September is 6 months
yep.
That most of my restaurants have been closed.
Mine too. Lule, I mean, it's like
yeah.
we're waiting for people to come back downtown.
Yeah. So it's 6 months. It's just mind-boggling to
yeah.
me that everything has been closed for that long. Anyway, Palace, we have favorite dishes there. When we first opened, we used to have specials every night, and they would Tuesday night was the wood-fired goat night.
Yeah.
And we had a big rotisserie. We still do have the big rotisserie, and put the goat on the rotisserie and did it low and slow all day long. And
then that night, chicken, too.
That night. Every night we do the chicken, but we would serve the goat on Tuesday night. So we had the Metal Valley ham on Wednesday night with grits. And, you know, it was really fun. But some dishes made it from the very day we first opened. All the way to today, right?
Yeah.
Like the pleen. Martha's been making the pleen for
so
over
delicious.
25 years. The chicken wings, the smoky chicken wings, which started out as a family meal, became a very popular recipe. I put it in the first book. The Burger Royale was very palatial. So those are all things we're going to celebrate at the dock, the warehouse dock out in Ballard.
September 18th.
We're going to have a few of those Palace items, and it's going to be all Palace all the time at the dock on September 18th. So if you go to our website, We have pop-ups pretty much every day. Yesterday was BLTs, chili dogs, fish and chips is what got C-Town started down in the market. We now are open for fish and chips in the Pike Place Market. You know, just all sorts of fun stuff happening out at the dock.
That's what I like about that warehouse. You're keeping it fun. I like it.
Yeah, so much going on. Maddie can't even keep up marketing everything, so she needs to stop spending so much time with her little children, the little beast, and spend more time with Tom Douglas. You can pre-order your Palace Kitchen dinner box if you can't make it to the dock or you want to get there and get out fast. Pre-order your box at tomdouglas.com, and we'll save a Palace Kitchen dinner box for you. And it's National Cheeseburger Day at the same time. All right, up next, it's Chris Pink, CanCan founder, and Chef Monica Seward. They're going to be here to talk to us about the Pike Place Market's CanCan Culinary Cabaret on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society radio show. Tom Douglas here.
Terry Rotaro, the chef in the hat, also here.
And chef, are you going to do a rendition of the can-can? You know, it is from La Boheme, right? Or is that? Nice.
That's it.
Nice. Chris Pink and Monica Seward are here of the can-can down in the Pike Place Market. The new can-can culinary cabaret. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You got to get right up to the microphone.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you. So tell us about the CanCan and when you're going to get reopened. Just pull that mic right over to you while you're chatting, and tell us what's going on there. That's been around for a million years. Not that you look a million years old, but it's been around forever.
I feel a million years old right now. we're kind of going with the flow. We're not sure when we're reopening to the general public, but right now we're making plans to do a sort of show-to-go model, which allows folks to do our wonderful three-course dinners that Monica has so amazingly put together, as well as watching a show. So it makes a sort of fun evening at home. So we're going to give that a try. We've been testing. She's been literally mailing us these items over the last couple weeks, and we've been doing all the technology things, making sure everything is absolutely perfect, and making sure that this this experience models what we do in the space itself, to the best of our ability.
So, sorry, let me try to understand this. You're going to do a video, or how does that work?
Yes, so we didn't plan on it, but we had a lot of, footage, and all of our shows are filmed just for archival purposes and for training dancers and that sort of thing. So we'll do a recording of the show with audience intact, which is sort of one of the main ingredients of our shows is the audience participation, reaction, interaction, and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Cool. So you get the video and you get a meal.
That's correct.
That's awesome.
And a few other surprises.
Tell us the history of the CanCan in the market and who's been behind it the whole time. Have you been behind it the whole time?
I founded it, yes.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, over 15 years ago, and we've been, we started off as scrappy gets, no money, no anything, and just sort of started with this foundational concept of the entertainment and meal concept together, not in a sort of how do I say it? A cheesy dinner theater sort of way, progressive, sort of contemporary version of what that might look like, and have made every mistake along the way that you could possibly make.
Hopefully learn from it.
And we learned from it. And so, the last couple months of our being open, so January and February, we had our best 2 months we've ever had. And then we close.
With the rest of us.
Yeah. It seems to be a very repetitious song we keep hearing. I feel the same way. I mean, like, we were looking really good.
So I'm surprised to hear you say only 15 years, because I feel like the CanCan's been there long before that.
Well, it was Patty Summers, right?
Patty Summers.
Yeah, Patty Summers' cabaret was there for 22 years, right?
Cabaret. Yeah,
and so she and her husband Gary Steele were the jazz club,
right?
You know, longest operating jazz club in one location for as long as.
I mean, you had Jazz Alley right behind the Palace Kitchen, and of course you had Ernestine Anderson's down in Pioneer Square too for quite a while. So if you're not familiar with the Pike Place Market, the can-can is kind of, if you look out from the sidewalk level, you'd look at the clock in the Pike Place Market, the north end or south end of the Pike Place Market there, and if you're actually down a floor, right?
Yeah. You just take a right as you past the flower shop, Left Bank Books, take a right, and they're...
If you get to Frank's Quality Produce, you've gone too far.
That's right.
So, why don't you jump on the mic there, Monica? Tell us about your side of this journey, this extravagance in this journey.
Well, being at the Can-Can has been really amazing for me. I was a patron there before, and this experience, there's so much fun energy and sexy vibes in the Can-Can, and I really try to make my food match that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're really trying to do in our to-go program, and just kind of bring that level to your house and really create that experience and that energy that we miss so much right now in this time.
So how does that manifest itself in your menu? Like what to you is sexy food, or what are you trying to match up with that the show's bringing that you try to match the food to?
My style is kind of more like comfort food with some exotic spices and some French techniques thrown in there.
Uh-huh.
And just kind of keeping it really local, using and sourcing things from the market and keeping it really fresh and seasonal.
It's nice to see the market coming back alive. It was so dead for so long, and then all of a sudden, it seems like in the last month, it started to come alive a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Last Sunday, it was actually really nice walking through. It actually seemed like a little bit closer to normal, which is a really nice feeling, and seeing vendors come back and people be so happy in the space, and really being able to share that specialness of the market.
Right.
Yeah.
So if people were to buy your show and a dinner, what kind of what is a typical type 3-course menu that you would be serving?
I put together a braised short rib with some purple potatoes and a charred scallion verde sauce and some seasonal snap peas.
Lovely.
I also have, we always cater to having a vegan vegetarian dish, so I have some risotto cakes with some saffron and smoked paprika with succotash. And I have a truffle chicken with some more purple potatoes and some Duca roasted carrots. And so I'm just trying to really utilize what's in season and what we can get right now to try to really have that and bring that to the table.
And Chris, when you see a menu like that, what does that do from a show perspective? How do you time that all together? Do you have people like, okay, now's the time to serve the chicken. Now's the time to serve the salad. Get out the dessert. We got the kicks coming.
a little bit of that. Like I mentioned previously, we've done everything so wrong so many times. We've got this thing down to a science.
Uh-huh.
And so it's very flow. We seat people in a way that we can tier everything and allow the courses to flow, seamlessly from one to the other. And then we have moments. So when we're building the show, we have a staff show, and we have folks like Monica, our lead servers, and people that run that side of the house tell us where they need their breaks and where they need moments.
Right.
And then we will literally adjust the show to sort of squeak in these food and whatever it may be. And there's a lot of negotiation of time and space during, these shows are an hour and a half. And, on Saturdays we had 5 a day. So it's got to be super tight and super refined, or you're screwed from the first part all the way to the end.
Yeah,
We have a midnight show, so if you're,
it's like in the restaurant business, if you need 3 turns and the first table languish stays another 45 minutes, you're basically messed up on that table for the rest of the
absolutely
night.
For
years I did the menus for Teatro Zanzani, which is I love dinner theater. It's just one of my quirks, but that was definitely part of the deal, right? That was a 3-hour show with 5 courses, and you really had your you had to have your your courses down, timed perfectly.
Absolutely.
Because the show revolved around the food service.
Yeah. And that, and at Zenzani, that the food was such an integral part of the actual show itself, too, which differs a little bit from us. But they, y'all did a marvelous job putting that all together.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Norm in a while. You know, it had to close down. It was remodeling over there in Woodinville. I don't know. I haven't heard if it's reopening or not. So
I hope so. It's such a great organization.
It's a fun thing.
Yeah.
So Can-Can, what is the heart of Can-Can? We all know about the kicks, but what else is there?
You know, we're a creative organization, really, when it comes down to it. Everything from the shows all the way through to the drinks and so forth. But really, what differentiates us probably from any other organization in the city is that everything is created from scratch. So our music soundtracks, our costumes, our choreography, absolutely everything is created per show to cater to that particular show, including the food and drink menus, etc. So everything is super sort of developed for that one particular moment.
So the whole thing is
time.
A show. Every time it's a show from beginning to end. That's cool.
Absolutely.
And then finally, as you get up and get going, how do people buy tickets? How do they get in line for the meals? What's the
process? So we'll be doing sort of a limited release here relatively soon, and I'm guessing it's going to be in the next couple weeks. Limited release. We'll have limited orders. They will be available online, and we'll announce it on social media really soon as to the actual go date.
And do they go to your website or
thecancan.com.
Cancan.com.
Mm-hmm. And we'll announce on social media as well, on all of our social media. And we have a giant mail list that we'll send out to, and we'll Michelle, our wonderful PR firm, will also help us.
If you're not on the mailing list, now it's time to go to cancan.com and sign up.
That's right. We've been chatting with Chris Pink and Chef Monica Seward about the Can-Can Culinary Cabaret. And then I'm going to ask Sean Del Torre to take us out with a little bit of classic Can-Can music on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Up next, it is Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. I hear you guys are going to stick around and be our next victim.
Yes, please.
Oh, easy now.
Just jinx us. Coming right back on Cairo 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
The chef in the chapeau. Tell people about the where to find that River Cruise stuff.
Oh, yes. I forgot to mention earlier that if you want to find more information about next June trip we're doing through the Rhone Valley on the cruise with the three winemakers, you can go to our Facebook page at Hot Stove Radio Show.
I'll put the link up.
Madeleine, you will help me and put all this information up there?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
All right. This tasty trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards by me that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop, or find them online at tomdouglas.com/shop.
I love this sponsorship, Tom. That's cool.
And Madeline?
Tom, did you know that this weekend is the kickoff for our Seahawks in Seattle?
I did know that.
Well, you are in luck as well. We have come up with a Seahawks-themed three-pack of rubs. The salmon rub, our Tokyo spice rub, and the peri-peri representing the blue and green colors for our Seahawks. And because of that, I think we should choose two winners today, because we asked people what their favorite tailgate grill items were, and we got a lot of really good answers.
All right.
So we'll be playing today for Lori Dragseth, who loves grilled jalapeno poppers with a side of brisket chili.
I love brisket chili.
It sounds so good right now. And Jeanette Harris, who wrote in that she loves grilled flank steak with veggie rub, which, you know, was an easy pick for us, I think.
Exactly. And the veggie rub is garlic and fennel and deliciousness. Just because it says veggie rub doesn't mean you can't use it on flank steak.
Absolutely. It's my favorite. So we'll be playing for both of those, and we are very lucky to have Chris and Monica from the Can-Can sticking around. Are you guys ready? We'll have Terry go first, and then you two will be up, and Tom will bring it up on the end.
All right. Sounds great. We're excited.
Okay, Terry.
Yes.
Question one. What do you call the rotating rod a rotisserie item is cooked on?
Ooh, there is actually a name for that? A rotisserie item rod. Spit.
Oh! How did you guess?
Wow.
I don't know. You were spitting everywhere.
Exactly. Tom's microphone God, is a little
thank
deep.
God you get your mask on.
I'm just trying to be helpful.
Question two. Which of these ingredients is not used to make a choux pastry? Flour, sugar, eggs, or butter?
Sugar.
That is correct. Well done. Two for two. Okay.
Don't act so surprised. He's a smart dude.
He is smart.
I've made choux quite a few times in my life.
Me too. Size 14.
All right. Mirabelle, Damson, and Victoria are all
Plum.
Varieties of what fruit?
Plum.
Wow. I was
Harry's
trying to
on a roll.
Things. Okay. Three
jelly
for three.
Roll.
Mirabelle, so you know, is one of my favorite plum in the world. It makes the best. When you take Mirabella and you give it just a little incision on top and you put it in vodka for about 5 months,
mm-hmm.
OMG, those are the best Mirabella in the world.
I like it. Okay, which grape variety is used to produce Beaujolais Nouveau?
Gamay.
Correct. Four for four. You're on a roll. Okay, this is, we're going to weave
see,
in
there's
some...
two French questions in there, just so you know.
I was trying, okay. You know, I'm
and one that
really...
spit out of Tom's mouth.
That's true. Yeah.
I know, I had to clean my microphone after that.
I always root for Thierry, as Tom knows.
Oh.
Absinthe is the key ingredient for what's known as the cabaret cocktail. What is the primary flavor of this green spirit?
Anise.
Correct.
Wow.
Five for five.
Five for five. Where to go, Chefy?
Okay. Oh, Monica. I'm sorry. This is not normally the case, so nobody was nice to our guests. So.
Team Can-Can, are you ready?
We are ready.
Okay, okay. Come right up to the mic when you talk into it there.
Okay, which Italian town is considered to make the world's best balsamic vinegar? Venice, Parma, or Modena?
Modena.
Correct. Wonderful.
Oh, man. I'm feeling
you got some hard ones.
I'll help you, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay. Creme de cassis is made with what fruit?
Blackberry.
Ooh, I'll give you that one. Black currant is what I was actually looking for.
Yes.
But let's give her a half point. She got
half. Give her the whole point. Give her the whole point. It's the same color.
What is the French word for pancake?
Crepe.
Correct. Three for three.
Oh, I am getting so hosed here.
Okay, here we go. In the opening song of Cabaret, Wilkemin. Many phrases are repeated in three different languages. What languages are they?
German.
Yes.
French. German, French, Italian.
German, French, and English.
English.
That was good. We'll give you another half point on that one, so you're good.
Oh, it's a half point.
A half point. Got two out of three. Okay. In the cabaret-themed movie Moulin Rouge, Nicole Kidman famously sang, blank are a girl's best friend.
Diamonds.
That is correct. One of my favorite
she was so
movies.
Good.
I know.
I love that movie.
French,
okay, Tom. I believe Thierry is
four
still.
Four out of five?
Yep, they got four
and
out of
a half
five.
Out of five.
Yeah.
No, four.
Four. Well, they got two halves to make a four.
So three and two halves makes four.
Oh, I gave him the whole point on the blackberry, black currant.
So Thierry's still in the lead.
All
okay,
right.
Tom. This was already mentioned earlier the show.
Ants on a log.
What are the three main ingredients for ants on a log?
Well, you need a boat or need a log, so that would be celery.
Mm-hmm.
And you need something to stick the ants to, so that the sap of the log would be the peanut butter, and then you have the raisins on top.
That is correct.
I actually love ants on a log.
Do you really?
It's a guilty pleasure, absolutely.
Wow, I would not have guessed that. Mm-hmm. What was the first cooking show on television hosted by James Beard in 1946 called?
Do you have options?
No way.
Okay.
Remember, you're my favorite.
Yeah, no, I got it. Don't give
Julie
me any
Child?
Options.
This was the first cooking show on television hosted by James Beard. What was the show
called?
I'm
going to call it Beard's Bites.
That sounds wrong. It was called I Love to Eat.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
If you ever saw the man, you would agree with
me. I agree with that.
Third question. What is the name for the form of sushi which features a slice of fish on top of pressed rice?
Nigiri.
That is correct. You are two for three. As one of the oldest continuously operated public farmers markets in the United States, the Pike Place Market opened to the public on August 17th in what year?
Oh, my God.
1908.
Ooh. This is for Tom.
Oh, you guys, thank you so down. Much. That was awesome. 1908.
Ron, 1907.
Oh! I got hosed by our guest.
That was a trick answer.
She was trying to lead you. Yes. She was trying to lead you astray.
That was awesome.
Okay, final question. Made famous by Sally Bowles, plays by Liza Minnelli. In the film Cabaret, Sally makes a prairie oyster for her flatmate, Brian Roberts. A prairie oyster contains brandy, Tabasco sauce, Worcester, and what?
Testicles.
Ooh, close, but a whole egg yolk is the drink. Really?
Why is that close? That's not close.
Oh, I know, that's what you... I'm sorry, you really threw me off by that answer. Let's do that again. Please, Sean, delete.
No, it's like a... What is the A mountain oyster is like a mountain.
A Rocky Mountain oyster
is a testicle, yes. A beef testicle.
Yeah, but this is a drink. Brandy?
Oh, I didn't hear that, Paul.
Oh, I just thought I was marinating the brandy.
I know.
Anyway, gross. I lose. What did I get? Two out of five?
You
or three out of five?
Three out of five.
You get right. Lori and Jeanette a beautiful.
I can live with that.
Yeah, we're going to send
love.
Them some Seahawks.
I can live with that. I was stabbed in the back by our guest, but outside of that, I was fine.
They're going to be back next week, maybe?
If you want to be part of the show, unlike Monica ever again, you can join the community on Facebook or Hot Stove Society Show. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Madeline Dow Pennington and Amy Richardson from our company. Sound and production by Mark Goodenow from the Production Foundry. And editor is Sean DeTore, Cairo Radio. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo 97.3 FM, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.